Welcome to the Boss Lady Podcast. Whether you're an entrepreneur climbing the corporate ladder or a work-from-home parent, you are a boss. If you desire to make your life extraordinary, to reach and exceed your personal and professional goals, and learn from other strong leaders, then the Boss Lady Podcast is for you. As an entrepreneur, mother, wife, and former CEO, I share lessons and stories of both personal and professional successes and failures. Join me along with a diverse list of guests as we break down strategies, tools, and techniques that will enhance your career and your life. Together, we will embrace, empower, and educate each other. I am Teresa Rand, and this is the Boss Lady Podcast. And we are back with another episode of the Boss Lady Podcast. As you heard on the introduction, I am Teresa Rand, started the Boss Lady community and lots of other things. I do one commercial on my podcast. If you're a returning listener, you know this. So now's the time where you can pause and come back in like 10 seconds. But if you want to find out anything about the work that I do in the Boss Lady community, my consulting work, I use personality assessments, going into companies, helping improve communication. I do personal C-level coaching, executive coaching. So any of those things, you can find me at Teresa with no H, T-E-R-E-S-A, TeresaRand.com. There's tabs for everything I do, so go look it up, see if there's anything that excites you. But I like to spend my podcast time actually talking to my guest. And today we have a great guest. It's all about finances, ladies, all about finances. And yes, we've talked about this subject before, but it is one that I don't think we can ever hear enough. You know, what's that old marketing saying that you have to hear something seven times, hear, see, touch, whatever. We're not at seven times, but our guest today is certainly an expert in the field. And she also has some real life experiences that many of us have had, and she's very free in sharing those. So we will have lots to talk about. My guest today is Lisa Crosta. Lisa, am I pronouncing the last name correct? Good. I meant to ask you that before we started and I forgot. Lisa is a certified financial planner professional, as well as a certified public accountant, a CPA. She's the director of wealth management of BPP Wealth Solutions. She has gone through a divorce and raising three kids on her own. She aims to help other women who find themselves in tough situations. She guides clients through confusion of complex financial jargon, which we're going to talk about today, bringing clarity to the financial realm of her clients' lives. She spent her early days at Ernst & Young, and then after raising her children, returned to the financial industry, led the financial planning departments at Hennen & Walsh and Mass Mutual Tri-State. She has all kind of licenses. If you're in the insurance, you're running, well, what, 766 and 24 means. If you're not, just know she is an expert in what she does. But here's another fun fact. She has renovated six homes. So in her spare time, she might be found with a sledgehammer, shovel, or drill. That fascinates me. She loves skiing, reading, pickleball, cooking, spending time in the gym, spending time with her boyfriend, her daughter, and her two sons. So that's a pretty active life, Lisa.
It's busy.
Welcome. I'm so glad to have you on the podcast. I can do a podcast just about the home renovation because that always fascinates me.
I know.
I have a mother who loves to do that, but I did not get the gene. I'm like, okay, where do I put the couch? So do you do old homes or you do homes?
You know, where we live, and thank you for having me, Teresa. You know, where I live, there's a lot, the towns are old. It's the Northeast. So it's old. Yeah. My house is over 100 years old. And wow. I think this is the last old one. I didn't really do it on purpose. Like I did it because the most affordable houses are fix me uppers. And I can see through that. And a lot of people can't. Yeah. So, you know, I love the oranger, the shag carpet, and the uglier the wallpaper because that's, you pay less and you can do much. So I can see past that. But it's a ton of work. I mean, we've done everything from tiling to the last job, which was the hardest job I'd say ever, was putting in a blue stone patio in the backyard.
Wow.
Last year, like too big, you know, 2,300 square feet. I mean, and those each one in and of themselves, some of them are like 50 pounds and you have to lay them out like a puzzle first. It was brutal. It was brutal.
Yeah. Wow. That's amazing. But, so that's a great hobby. That's a good hobby. Keeps you busy.
Sure. Yes, it does. So,
one of the things that intrigued me about your information that you sent me ahead of time is you've got a couple of topics here that are all fascinating, but you one in particular, female communication in finance.
Yeah.
I want to start with why is that a topic? I mean, you list 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, like 10 different topics you can talk on.
Yeah.
Why this one specifically? Why did this one make the list?
Well, I think that women are perfectly and, you know, unbelievably capable of doing finance. But for some reason, we find, for various reasons, we find that sometimes women don't feel comfortable communicating about money, don't feel comfortable making some of the higher level decisions about money. And, you know, oftentimes we'll have a couple where they're incredibly successful. I mean, nobody's not smart. But because of divide and conquer, sometimes the women aren't taking on the higher level investment decisions and conversations and are happy to pass it on. And therefore they end up, you know, really doing a disservice to themselves. They don't learn it. They don't learn about it. They don't, and they can be caught, as they say in the, you know, tennis, back on your heels, because women do end up, you know, we know how high the divorce rate is, gray divorce. Women end up alone because of being widowed. You know, the vast majority of women die alone because men die first. So unfortunately, that's just the facts, statistics. So if you've never taken care of it, you know, and you have any of these circumstances, or you just get married later or not at all, which is a common trend, you need to understand your finances. You need to be able to communicate about them. You just need to not be afraid of them. So I've run a workshop on this, and we're going to do more where it's just teaching women to know their finance, just to have financial security and be able to have the conversations and not put it to the back burner until they're on their heels and they haven't had a chance to really understand it, you know, be ahead of the game.
So often I've heard throughout my career and life that, you know, the vast majority of wealth ends up in the hands of women. And it sounds like you would say that's true.
Because men die first. I think the stat is something like 84% of women die.
I thought it was big.
Alone. Yeah. It's huge. Yeah.
So we better figure this out, right?
Yeah.
Because if we're fortunate to live to a ripe old age and our spouse dies and we don't know what we're doing, a child is probably going to step in. Yeah. And yet again, you're going to have someone else. You're going to have someone else taking care of your finances when you're fully capable. And I loved how you start. It's not that we're not capable.
No.
It's for whether it's, you know, we could go into days of reasons why.
Yeah.
What did our mother teach us? What did, you know, what does society teach us? Mm-hmm. You know, did we work outside the home? Often if we don't work outside the home, we think we don't have an opinion in finances.
Yeah.
Which is sorely mistaken.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely.
Yeah.
And it's, you know, it's interesting when we get hired by couples. So we do, you know, we're financial planners and financial advisors, you know, any term you want to use, but I'd say we are financial planners first. And because we start every engagement with a plan, and a plan means we really dig into the cash flow. Like that's like the first foundation of a financial plan is the cash flow. And what is a cash flow? It's what comes in and what goes out, income and expenses, you know, assets and liabilities we look at, and we tie it all together. So you can see really at the end of the month or the end of the year, where are you? And is where you are, and I would say monthly, because so many people budget monthly, right? You know, at the end of the month, are you positive or negative? And is it what you need to be? You know, and is the positive enough to get you where you want to go? If it's negative and you're in retirement, that's fine. You have enough to support that negative consistently. Right. But that's the base. And I find when we have clients, a lot of times the women, I mean, it depends on the personality, but the women get really engaged if they haven't been before. And the plan almost, I find the women enjoy it. You know, they really get into it. They haven't, and it makes sense. So it's not that complex. You know, I'm not asking you to go pick stocks and design a portfolio, but just understanding the basics of your cash flow helps you understand if you're on track, you know, to get where you want to be, whatever that is.
Right.
And the women, I have had people tell me they're afraid for the first phone call with us. Like, what are you afraid of? Like, afraid we're going to yell at them or something? But that's not what it's about. And usually people are thrilled, you know, after the fact of going through it. It's usually a very eye-opening experience.
Yeah, absolutely. I think just knowing, you know, sometimes we just flow through our months and we really don't know where our money is going.
Yeah.
We just know when we run out, you know, or we don't have enough to do whatever.
Anything in life, uncertainty is the cause of so much anxiety, right? When you're waiting for your kid to get home, you don't know where they are. You're nervous about where somebody in your family, uncertainty is like the bane of anxiety. So if you have uncertainty around your money, you tend to have anxiety with it. So not that we can guarantee anything, but if you can see it and have pictures and have somebody to discuss it with, I can't tell you how many clients have said to us, they just feel better. They just feel like, oh, their shoulders came down.
Yeah, it makes such good sense. Well, you know, we were chatting before we started recording. You raised your three children on your own as a single mom. I had that same experience. And I remember those days. For me, at least, I had just gone to work 2 or 3 years before. I'd been a stay-at-home mom, so I wasn't making a lot of money at the time, early in my career as a young mom. And it was enough for me just to figure out how to feed everybody every week. You know, I didn't have a great child support. I didn't have any for a while. But so to think about investing at that time was just not even on my radar.
Yeah.
Thankfully, I had a great job that had a great retirement. Mm-hmm. But if it hadn't been for that, and I stayed in that job long enough to be vested in my retirement, and that served me well. But if I had not had that kind of job, I wonder where I would be. So what is your advice to someone that is just in the throes of life? And they're like, I can't even, I know I end up negative every month. So I don't need to have a plan. I just need to survive.
Yeah. It's a crappy place to be, but so many people get there at one point. I mean, I remember the first time ever when I first got divorced using a zero interest credit card. I'd never done that before. I never had a credit card balance. And that first 12 months I did, I had one. And then I just, you know, I figured it out, but it took me a while to dig out. But I think even if you're negative, knowing what you need to get out of that is helpful. So if you know you need to make $25,000 more to get yourself comfortable at the end of each month, knowing that is the first place, go ask for a raise. I mean, we have a client, it's the owner of our company actually has a client that this exact thing happened. She was before I was around, did her plan. She had to make $50,000 more. And she told her to go ask for a $50,000 raise. And she had the reason to ask for it. And it was unbelievable. She did get it. And not everybody will get that. But you got to ask. And we women are afraid to ask for money. And when I took my first job, one of the reasons they hired me, I was up against a guy who had all the credentials that I didn't have yet. I had my CPA, which was solid, but I didn't have the CFP and the other stuff. And they told me, the two owners told me that they hired me because I was hungry. They knew I needed to work. And and they started me not at a great salary, but I constantly asked for pay me on this, increase in this. And they did. And every time I got a license, I got a raise. And, you know, I said, okay, as soon as I do this, I want a raise. And I kept proving myself because they didn't know me. And they kept giving me, you know, raises and increases and abilities to make some bonuses. And you got to ask and you have to know what you need. Like if you know you need, like I said, $25,000 more, how do you get it? Do you ask for it? Do you have a side gig? You know, nowadays these side gigs are, you know, all over the place where you can stay at home and do some of them. But at least knowing, I feel like, again, knowing that number gives you the power to try to get to it.
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, I love that story. I remember when I first made a move from one state from Georgia to Florida with my job, and I was trying to finish my college degree because it was required for the position I kept wanting to get.
Right.
I finally convinced them to hire me because the person that had their credentials, they offered the job and that person turned them down. So they came back to me and said, okay, you really were our lead candidate, but you know, we know you're in school, you don't have your degree, but you're working on it. I mean, I was like 2 years away. So we're going to hire you at a lesser pay. Mm-hmm. And so they did. But in 6 months, every time I made an increase in something or they added something to my job, I would go back yep. and ask for more money. And it was little increments. But finally, I got to what at that time was the magical point for me, because right. I finally said, I've been doing this job for 18 months now. You've given me incremental raises, but I'm 6 months away from getting the degree. We both really know that's not going to change the way I'm working. Right. I want the title and I want the money that goes with it. And I'll never forget it. I literally got a $32,000 raise that day.
Yeah, that's amazing.
But, you know, and Lisa, your advice is so valuable, because if they can keep getting you to work for 50, why should they pay you 70 or 80?
Right.
I mean, that's just business. Yeah. It's and part is they just don't think about it.
No, you have to ask. You have to ask. And you have to ask yeah. consistently. And that company that I was at, I said to them too, you know, there were certain things at times where I was, well, I won't get into all of these. There's times where I was like, you know, I need this now. And they were, and I was hesitant to ask for it, like on a personal level almost. It wasn't a huge company, but it was a pretty big company. But the owner was very responsive. I was like, I need this personally now. And he's like, okay. And because I was working yeah. hard, I was doing what I was supposed to be doing. I wasn't sitting at home, but right. There was a little personal side to it. And they, and not all companies I think that'll work with, but you got to try.
Right.
And if not, you got to support it with, I got my, like you said, I improved this thing. I changed this. I got this degree right. and keep asking. Yeah.
Yeah. It can't just be because you need it. You have to show.
No, of course.
An employee come to me one time and say, my wife is pregnant. I need a raise. I was like, I'm going to give you the opportunity, because he was a good employee,
yeah.
to walk out of this office and put on paper why I should give you a raise that has nothing to do with your wife being pregnant. Because
right.
I didn't have anything to do with that. I wanted that.
Right. You have to have both. You have to have a reason, and the need is just a little get to the emotions.
And I knew I was going to give him the raise because he was a good employee, but yes. I was like, no. But he came back with, here's the reasons yeah. I think I deserve a raise, and I gave them to him.
Right.
You know, but it wasn't because his wife was pregnant.
Great thing to learn for the next job, because nobody's just going to give, I mean, just give it to you. You have to be doing the work. And yeah. But women are afraid to ask, and I didn't know this when I had applied for that job, but women tend to, from what I've read, if there's a job, you know, posting, and there's 8 requirements, you've heard this, the men will apply when they have 4, the women won't apply until they have all 8.
All 8.
Just apply.
Which keeps us from getting jobs.
I mean, that was my experience completely. I had 1. And you have to apply. Especially in this day and age where we workers for the first time in a long time are more in need. You know, employers are looking for us.
Absolutely.
Good employees.
Right. Absolutely. Absolutely. So let's say we've got our basics covered and we're feeding our kids. We're doing all of those things. Got a roof over our head. But we've never invested.
Yeah.
You know, let's say we've got a retirement. We got all that those things. But this whole stock thing is extra scary.
Yeah.
You know, it seems risky. It seems so. If somebody is feeling angst, but they're interested, how did they start? Wait, where do I even begin?
Right. Well, I mean, if you have a 401k or a 403b at work, that is where you start. 100%. It's pre-tax. You know, it lowers how much you pay in taxes because it lowers your taxable income.
Right.
It's incremental, so it's small. You can start with. It comes out of each paycheck. It's you don't feel it as much. You know, a lot of times if you put 100 in, you only lose 80 because you save taxes on it, depending on where you live, of course. But that's the first place to start. And those 401ks, all of them have either target date or age-based portfolios that are allocated according to your age or when you may retire. You know, as an advisor, those are not my favorite because I'd rather get into the nuances. But if you don't know anything and you're scared, that's where you start. You pick the one that the target date corresponds with your year of retirement, maybe a few years later, actually. Don't go on the other side because you want to keep it invested. And that's where you start. If you do not have those plans at work, you got to open a brokerage account, you know, at Vanguard or Fidelity. Yeah. And I don't work for any of these companies, but, you know, Schwab, a low-cost brokerage place where you can buy. There's no costs. And to be honest, you know, you got to start with broad index investing, like buying the whole S&P 500, or, you know, you're not going to pick stocks, an individual person, unless you have, you know, a knack for it, you love it, you've got information, you study it, you should just buy the indexes. And there's thousands and thousands of these indexes out there called ETFs. They're exchange traded funds. They're very low cost, and they buy like the whole S&P 500. So you get to own a little piece of the 500 largest companies in the U.S. That's where you start.
You know? And you can put, what's the minimum amount to put in something?
$50. Nothing. And really, you should set it up. I would, you know, unless you've accumulated a lot, you just never did it. But most people will start with a small amount. Like, do it like they always say, pay yourself first. So when you pay your mortgage or your rent at the start of the month, if you can't do it on the start, because that's usually a big number that rent and mortgages do. So maybe you do it on the 15th, send $100 in every month. So when it's called the benefit of dollar cost averaging is the term. And what it means is that if you send in $100 and the stock market's really high, you won't buy as many shares. When the stock market is low, you'll be buying more shares because they're cheaper. Right. So it's just a natural way to kind of even out your purchases. And you can't time the market. You can't decide when to get in and out. You know, you get lucky here and there, but it's not the way to invest. So even our best investors we don't like them to do that. So you just slowly start buying. And I would just do it monthly. And it's either in a 401k, a 403b, or if not, just in a low cost brokerage account.
And that doesn't feel as risky. I'm not betting the farm. You know, I don't have all this money. If I, you know, I'm not going to lose it all at one time. It's for the long haul. Yep. It's all of those things, because so often we're just simply afraid of the risk.
Yeah.
Doesn't matter.
And women tend to be more conservative investors. Right. But the only thing I'll backtrack on that a little bit is, before you do any of that, you should have an emergency fund. So you should have 3 months of your living expenses set aside. Right. And the one nice thing about high interest rates right now is you can find money markets that pay, you know, for over 4%. So you don't have to, you know, 2 years ago you made zero or point, you know, nothing. Right. So you get those 3 months. That's the first thing. That's the very first thing you do. And then if you can start adding to retirement, do it. And then if you also can save outside of that, or if you don't have a retirement, you can save in your other accounts. Just be aware that this is, when I'm talking about this kind of saving, this is long-term saving, right? So this is not saving for the house you're going to buy next month. You know, that's a different, you can't invest the same way when it's short-term money. So my answer to your question was more of long-term when I say buy that.
That was what I was getting to.
That's what I thought
it was,
but I thought I should be clear.
No, that's a good clarity. But that's actually, exactly what I meant. So what about when you, I'm trying to frame the question. Yeah. You know, we've talked a little bit about investment, retirement, obviously your emergency fund, because there's another stat out there that, you know, a high percentage of people, a car goes down for $1,000 and you're riding the bus. You know, you don't have that to fix the car. And that's a very real to happen, especially if you're in some of these life-changing, difficult moments that, you know, we've talked about. So at what point do we need to hire a financial planner?
Yeah.
I mean, is that, I don't guess anything's always necessary, but we start out talking about, even if you don't have if you've got a negative at the end of the month, you need to plan to get out of that.
Yeah. Yeah.
So when do we know we need the expert to help us? Or maybe we don't know it, but what are some signs that we go, maybe I need some help here?
I mean, I get it. When you don't have an emergency fund yet, to pay money to hire a financial planner is tough. You know, it doesn't make a lot of sense. And you know, and we charge for our financial planning because we spend a lot of time planning. We just don't, you know, we just don't grab your money and invest it. We got to figure out, what is it for? Is this for, again, all the different, might be for all different buckets, and we invest it differently. So, you know, if you're still trying to form your emergency fund, you know, it's too soon. But if you really, I guess my thing is, if you really feel uncertainty and you want somebody to talk to it about, and, you know, maybe you can come up with a little money to have a planner, it's very helpful to do. There's a ton of stuff online. There's a ton of financial literacy online. You know, I would always start there, and there's bad advice everywhere, but, you know, you got to take your time and figure out what makes sense. But I find a lot of people come to me when they realize that, I always say, they can't do the calculation on the back of an envelope anymore. So maybe they have two kids. They're not sure if or how much they should put in a 529. You know, they're either going to buy their first house or that second, you know, they're going to upgrade. Should they, they're not sure if should they want to do, they can do it. Maybe somebody just got a new job and they're like, oh, I think I'm saving enough. And, you know, I have some clients that are a financial financial analyst. So they're really financial people, but they don't know if they're doing their stuff right. Like, they can do their analyst job for the company they work for, right? And they get it, but they're like, it's so hard to figure it all out. Wait, this is for the kids for college. This is maybe for vacation money. And am I saving up for retirement? And until you, it's hard to put it all together. I think, you know, 40 years ago, maybe we could do it easier, but between the tax laws and the different advantages of all the different accounts and the different rules, that's when it really helps to hire somebody. And we just like I said, we put it all together. You see, you're like, okay, this is going to help me get, you know, half of my kids' education saved, because we can't all save for $240,000 for each kid or whatever craziness it might be. But at least you have a path. Okay, we're going to cover half of it maybe. And then we're going to use, you know, we have a plan for the rest of it. And so then I can go on vacation. I don't have to I don't have to eat ramen for the rest of my life. So I can spend all this money, but you can help make choices of where you want to save your money. You know what your goals are, right? As I always say, when you write down your goals and you visualize them, they happen. So you see in that plan, you know what? Another 20,000 will help me save or do this more. And we don't want you to spend, you know, when people get into that rut where every 10,000 extra they make, they just spend. And I don't want to keep seeing your life. I personally don't love to see your lifestyle keep raising to that level of income. Let's make sure we're hitting some of those goals we want to do with that money. And so I think when you have decisions to make, it starts to get too complex for yourself. A lot of times lifestyle changes, you know, clients want to quit a job, change a job. You know, those are great times. A lot of people wait till they're close to retirement, which I think is too late.
Yes, I'd love
to start sooner. I'd say the majority of our clients, maybe early 50s, but I have all of them. I have kids and kids. Kids in their 30s. I have a 26-year-old who just makes it a lot of money, happens to have an amazing job, make a lot of money, doesn't know what to do with it. So she hired us. And she wants to be smart, you know. And then I have the people in that next stage. The kids are young. They're trying to make the next decisions or closer to retirement. So I think it's when you personally, you feel it. You're like, I can't do this alone anymore.
You kind of know, you know. But again, you know, we talk about that emergency savings. I think that is first. But even that sometimes can be daunting. So if you need help with that, it's okay to reach out. You know, we reach out for help with everything else. Yep. Why not this?
Yep.
And certainly if you can start it earlier in your career, because we do have a tendency to, when we get a raise, our lifestyle changes. Yes. We get a better car, we get a better house. And when we're used to live on $50,000, now we're making $100,000 and we're like, where did it go?
I know.
Well, I drive a Cadillac instead of a Honda. I live in a, you know, gated community instead of not. I mean, you know, I'm making stuff up.
Right.
But it really does. You quickly adjust to your lifestyle as opposed to taking the time. So anytime there's a life change, that's a good time to go through this process.
Absolutely.
And certainly waiting to retirement is too long. And in my opinion, and I think especially if you don't have a company that's offering a retirement, and now because people change jobs every 2 years, you ought to, even if you're with a company that has a retirement, you need to know what to do with that retirement with the next job, right? It's because they're not always the same.
Well, and people forget their 401ks, and you know, there's those unclaimed funds that each state has, and they have them because people lose. You would think you would never do it, but people forget about their old 401ks. I had a client recently who thought they were rolling over one 401k from a big brokerage house, and two came over. They forgot there was another one, and it wasn't $5.
Right. Yeah, you do. You forget. You really do. But again, you know, we're not staying in jobs for 30 years anymore. So.
And then that money isn't really managed. So it's left behind. You know, maybe you put it in a target date because you weren't comfortable doing, but now you've gotten more comfortable and you want to do a little more nuanced investing, but you forgot about that one. And where's the paperwork and what's the login? Right.
It can quickly become overwhelming. It can quickly become overwhelming. Yep. But you know, you mentioned goals, and as we're getting close to the end here, every time I hear goals, because I do goal setting classes, that's one of the things I do in my business. Yep. And there always should be a financial goal.
Yeah.
In there. And you're right. Write it down, whatever it looks like, because, you know, the statistics are you're 60 some odd percent more likely to reach your goals if you write them down. And that's not a number to, you know, take lightly.
No.
Write them down and then tell somebody and get an accountability person.
Yeah.
But there should always be a financial goal. Either I want to make this much money, or I want to save this much money, or this is the year I invest, whatever it is.
And you know what I find empowering sometimes? Instead of a dollar figure, I want to have enough money to be able to do X.
I love
that. Like, I want to have enough money to be able to take my kids on vacation every year. That costs $5,000, $7,000, $10,000. Because it's not the money itself. It's what the money buys, right?
What it buys, right. Absolutely. And it does, you know, what you said, buys that kind of security and that you're not constantly worried about money.
Yeah.
I mean, a lot of people go through life always worried about money.
Yes.
And, you know, so tell us, with all that great advice, where can we find you? Obviously, it'll be in the show notes, but for our listeners today, just tell us where we can find you.
So BPP is the name of our company. And I don't know if this will help people remember, but it stands for Build, Protect, and Preserve. So when we work with our clients, the building has to do with all the cash flow and the investments. The P is protecting, is insurances, making sure you have what you need. It's appropriate. And the P is preserving, which is, you know, do you have your documents, your healthcare proxy, your wills? Mm-hmm. So we kind of always do this circle with our clients, trying to cover all the bases. So that's the BPP. So our name is BPP Wealth is the website.
Okay.
You can find us at BPP Wealth. You just on LinkedIn, you can find me by my name, Lisa Crosta, which you gave out. Those are the two best places. I'm not on Instagram.
I know. I have an account, but actually I have a social media person who's like, you got to do more on that. It's like, can I just pay you to do it? Yeah. I don't want to do that. I had a dinner with two of my teenage granddaughters last night, and some Snapchat thing came up, and one of them said, Nanny, you have Snapchat? I said, I don't even give me your phone.
Well, that's like, so funny.
I've been afraid I was going to see her Snapchat.
Snapchat has the most amazing maps I've ever seen, though. It's very cool. Gosh. But if you go to our website, if you do go to BPP Wealth, you can sign up for a newsletter. So you can, and it's not crazy. You're not going to get an email. I think it's twice a month, but you'll see the stuff. You'll get a little information of what we have out there. You can also get the first chapter of Deborah's book, The Owner of My Company. And the other thing that we're doing for podcast guests is an hour consultation to solve a problem. So everyone does a free half hour call. So we wanted to do a little bit more. But if you have, and I can't solve all the problems, but you know, a problem you want to discuss, have a person to go over with an hour to come to us with something, we're going to do a free consult. So if they mention your show, they reach out to us on the website, we're doing that.
Awesome. Great. Well, I'll be sure to put that in the show notes.
Excellent.
I'm going to make myself a quick note.
Yeah.
So 1 hour to solve a problem. Yep. I'll probably word it a little differently.
A financial problem, not a kid problem.
I know, right? I was like, woo, that could be interesting call. But this has been fascinating as women, as people. Yeah. But my audience is mostly women. Yeah. We can never talk about this subject too much.
No, not at all.
Because as we said, we are going to end up with the money.
We are.
You know, for the most part, that's just how it works. And that's a good thing if we can plan for it. It's a good thing, or it can be a devastating thing. Mm-hmm. And we want it to be a good thing.
Right. And not
so scary. We're going to keep having this conversation. And I will put all your information in the show notes. And I thank you so much for being on the podcast. So glad we connected. Yeah. And I will end this podcast like I end all of my podcasts with my grandfather saying that he told us when he was alive was to always take time to stop and smell the roses. Mm-hmm. So until we meet again, take care.
Thanks, Teresa.